Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual today. As I'm sure you're not surprised to hear, they will all be related in some form or fashion to the president's State of the Union address. He's been president for a little over 5 years now. And, of course, Jim, on the 2008 campaign trail, he was talking about how if he's elected, the oceans would decrease, I guess, and the planet will heal. And then we got stimulus that will save our economy, supposedly, the healthcare system reform that he wanted so badly. And we've obviously talked about the ramifications of that. But when you look at what the president was proposing on Tuesday night, not exactly quite as ambitious as he was a number of years ago. Here's just a sampling of what the president was calling for.
Every 4 minutes, another American home or business goes solar. Every panel pounded into place by a worker whose job cannot be outsourced. Let's continue that progress with a smarter tax policy that stops giving $4 billion a year to fossil fuel industries that don't need it, so we can invest more in fuels of the future that do. Last year, I also pledged to connect 99% of our students to high-speed broadband over the next 4 years. Tonight, I can announce that with the support of the FCC and companies like Apple, Microsoft, Sprint, and Verizon, we've got a down payment to start connecting more than 15,000 schools and 20 million students over the next 2 years without adding a dime to the deficit. Tonight, I ask more of America's business leaders to follow John's lead. Do what you can to raise your employees' wages.
So, Jim, we've gone from transforming America and transforming one-sixth of the economy to helping Timmy get a few more dollars in his minimum wage.
Before we get too far into this, I really feel like we should apologize to our listeners, because at this point it's late morning on Wednesday and the president is still talking. And so we can only judge the first 15 hours or so of this speech. We know that it goes on for several days, so slightly longer than the Winter Olympics. So we're going to judge it as best we can. But these are just the president's introductory remarks. So it was an astonishingly long speech. And to the extent there was good news for anyone who had to sit through all of it, it is that we have now entered the stage of lowered expectations for this president. You mentioned that the rhetoric is no longer so highfalutin. In a country that still has some really major problems facing us, both here and abroad, one of our rallying cries is, Greg, we're increasing the minimum wage for federal contractors. Yay! For like both of them.
I was going to say, how many are there?
Rarer than hen's teeth, my understanding is, because most federal contracts are impacted by Davis-Bacon, which sets them at the prevailing union wages for the area. So this affects almost nobody. However, one of the reasons Democrats are pushing that minimum wage hike is because it affects union wages, which are usually some percentage or some multiple of what the minimum wage is. There's going to be a White House summit on working families. Can you feel the tingling and the excitement? You know, it's one small ball limited initiative after another. And what this says is that, look, you know, the president kind of knows that the chances of the Democrats winning back the House in 2014 are slim to none, and Slim just left town. So really, the dynamic of President Obama, Speaker John Boehner, and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, only one of these guys is in real danger of losing his job next year, and that's Harry Reid. So the dynamic we saw over last year, a great deal of frustration on both sides, you know, really, you know, that's kind of what we have to look forward to for the next 3 years. We are going to be in a holding pattern. There isn't going to be any big grand bargains, because basically it's not what the president wants to do with his presidency. He's not interested in making big concessions. To quote him shortly after he got elected the first time, it's, I won. And, you know, John Boehner, for all of the accusations of squishiness, doesn't believe he was put on earth to help shepherd the Obama agenda through the House of Representatives. And so while we don't know exactly what the House makeup is going to look like after November, chances are good there'll still be a Republican majority. They'll still be mostly conservative, and they will be very wary of any administration proposals. Control of the Senate just makes it easier to prevent Obama's ideas, or if he has it, he can push it through one chamber but not the other. This is who we are and where we are. And unless there's a dramatic sea change in Obama's thinking, this is what we have for, you know, until January 2017. you know, I guess that's kind of good news if you think the first couple of years of Obama's presidency were a disaster with bad ideas like Obamacare being shoved through there. But otherwise, this is a presidency in a holding pattern. Lame duckhood has taken root pretty darn early. And that's the good martini, everybody.
All right, on to martini number two now. And as Jim mentioned, there's probably a lot of conservatives out there who are glad that the president didn't push anything sweeping, because we saw what sweeping looked like in the first 2 years when the Democrats controlled the White House and the House and the Senate. And we got what many conservatives believe to be bad policies, from Obamacare to a lot more debt to the government takeover the student loan industry and all sorts of other things. At the same time, though, there are 3 years left in the president's term, and we do have real problems. Internet connectivity and minimum wage notwithstanding, there's a jobless stagnation is the right way to look at it. But obviously, when you look at the number of people leaving the job market, not even looking for work anymore, people frustrated with Obamacare, problems on the international stage. You talked a couple of weeks ago about the region being on fire from Tunisia to Pakistan. There's a lot of problems that need addressing, and it doesn't look like he's in any mood to address any of them in a way that would seem competent.
Yeah, and that's where you really kind of have this itching sense that we're going to start looking at this as lost years. Because even if, like, he bragged that the deficit has been cut in half. Yes, from the worst ever to the fifth worst ever. That's not that great. Unemployment is down a bit. A lot, as you said, a lot of that's down from people leaving it. I just came across this statistic, and I put it up on CampaignSpot. We are still 1.2 million jobs fewer than we had back in December 2007. If it doesn't feel like we've really recovered, it's because we haven't really recovered. And all the problems he diagnosed in that speech, he was accurate and deserves credit for acknowledging that. The problem is it came like after a couple paragraphs of happy talk about how great the economy is doing. He didn't use the term malaise, but you kind of have this sense that the country is sinking into a sense of depression and frustration and just lack of optimism for the future. I threw out what struck me as, I think, kind of a, some people might think it was a kind of a crazy idea, but a very approach. I've completely inversed my martinis today, Greg, because there's a part of me that feels like, presuming there's no giant crisis in Iran and they don't develop a nuclear weapon, presume that the Middle East conflicts and bloodletting over there doesn't turn into some sort of, you know, major crisis on our shores. Presuming we ended 2016 in roughly the same state that we're in right now, I think the American people may be ready for a very different approach. And the Republican nominee will be able to say, you know, America, you gave this approach 8 years. And they got the stimulus they wanted. They got the health care reform they wanted. They've had the big government approach to things for a really long time, and it just hasn't worked. And I'm hoping the American people will be open to a very different approach coming 2016. Here we are, like I said, 1 year in, and it feels like a lame duck, and it feels like there's really nothing to look forward to coming out of our government for the next 3 years.
All right, on to martini number three now, and this is not related to the speech directly, but as everyone knows, the minute that the president says, thank you, God bless America, about 75% of the people in the audience, the members of Congress, bolt for the rotunda so they can be the first ones under the Klieg lights and have their response to the State of the Union even before the Republican response sometimes. So one of those who was speaking to the media was New York Congressman Michael Grimm. Staten Island is kind of the home base of his district. And here's the part you can actually understand from his confrontation with Michael Scotto of TV One in New York.
Not anything that's off topic. This is only about the president.
Well, what about?
Thank you.
All right. So Congressman Michael Grimm does not want to talk about some of the allegations concerning his campaign finances. We wanted to get him on camera on that, but he, as you saw, refused to talk about that. Back to you.
And then after that, there's this off-mic confrontation between Scotto and Grimm. We tried to clean it up, but you really can't understand it. So here's basically what happened. Grimm goes up to Scotto and says, let me be clear to you. You ever do that to me again, I'll throw you off this bleeping balcony. You're not man enough. I'll break you in half like a boy. Later, Grimm insisted that the reporter took a cheap shot at him. He says, I was annoyed. I was doing them a favor. The reporter took a cheap shot at the end, and I verbally took him to task. I was angry, and I had every right to be. Grimm says that the reporter blew it out of proportion because he went off topic. Jim, Britt Hume was saying on Twitter, the fact that this is getting this much attention means the speech was a dud, but it's still pretty bizarre behavior.
It is true. It definitely deserves a rebuke. Threatening to throw somebody off a high balcony obviously is unacceptable behavior. If he were to do it, it would be a crime. Although my understanding is that in Washington, D.C., throw a member of the D.C. press corps off a balcony is only a misdemeanor. we're not held in that high regard. I know he doesn't like getting questions about scandals or allegations of corruption, but you say no comment. And I think he handled it fine with that first one. No need to lose your cool. No need to threaten the guy. And it does kind of feel like that every once in a while, almost like clockwork, we get some member of the House delegation or some congressman, some GOP lawmaker who we've never heard of, comes out and either says something stupid or does something stupid. Sometimes it's a big name like Bob McDonald. But like, this was just a stupid thing for this guy to do. And he's got to know that, look, you're in the rotunda after the State of the Union, okay? This is cameras and microphones and about a bazillion witnesses are all around you. This is not the time to have a temper tantrum. So just egregious judgment on his part. I don't know whether these allegations are true or not, but look, when you run for Congress, you're going to have to get those kind of questions, all right? You're going to have to suck it up and be a big boy and deal with that and not throw a fit with something like that. So maybe it's time for the good people of Staten Island to contemplate a challenger. Maybe it's time for Michael Grimm to go back to his original career of writing fairy tales. Maybe this is a one-off. You know, I'm just reminded of Bob Etheridge. I guess I'd just be glad that he didn't grab anybody by the neck and say, "Who are you? Who are you?" like Etheridge did.
Yeah, a lot of WWE-type chatter this week. First, you had Richard Sherman. Now, this guy, you know, they're both going to be in New York, I assume, this weekend. So,
Richard Sherman for Congress, you know. he will shut down all that those initiatives coming through the House. He will deflect it. He will block it.
Yes. Think before you speak, especially if you are a public figure. Jim, have a great day. I know you are out the next couple of days, but we'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Thursday. Charlie Cook will be in for Jim for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.